following Evangelism Coach presentation is given by your host, Chris Walker, speaker, church consultant, international evangelism trainer, and principal writer at evangelismcoach.org.
Hey, this is Chris Walker with evangelismcoach.org, and I'm glad to have this expert interview or podcast once again today. It's Christmas time here. Christmas time is approaching around the world, and a lot of churches are implementing their Christmas planning and their Christmas events and activities and looking for different ways to attract people to their various Christmas events. Here at the time I'm actually recording this particular podcast, it's probably a little bit too late for your churches to do something this year, but as you begin to think about next year, or maybe as you stumble upon this podcast as Christmas season approaches in the following years, you'll be able to use this to kind of spur some of your creativity in different ways that you can reach out into your neighborhood. Today I have with me Kevin Cunningham, who is a pastor of a church up in the New Hampshire area, and I want to welcome him to our podcast today and say, Kevin, welcome, thanks for being here, and tell us a little bit about your church's setting and demographics so we kind of know about where you are, and then we'll talk a little bit about a Christmas outreach you did this year.
Sounds great. Thanks, Chris. Great to be here. Thanks for the opportunity. We are actually in Nashua, New Hampshire. I'm the assistant pastor focusing on three of the five purposes. I've got evangelism, discipleship, and fellowship on my plate. We're actually in about 45 minutes north of Boston. Population of Nashua is about 80,000, more or less, and when you include the neighboring towns within about 5-6 mile radius, we're up to about 200,000. We've got about 275 that we average on an average Sunday coming to worship with us.
Now, I follow you on Twitter, and recently you mentioned something about a Christmas outreach that you have done to use the town festival. And so tell us a little bit about the event in general and how your church got involved in that.
Thanks, Chris. It was a phenomenal opportunity. It really was. Every year on the Saturday after Thanksgiving, our city turns Main Street into a walking district. Each year, close to about 30,000 people come from all across New England. They visit downtown Nashua. It's kind of an official kickoff to the Christmas season. And there's a procession that goes from City Hall just at the center of downtown up, and I'm thinking about a good mile or so up to the other end of Main Street where they officially light the Christmas tree for the season. They close down the whole area, make it a walking district, and people can enjoy all kinds of live entertainment, food shops, samples from the restaurants and so forth. So it's a tremendous opportunity that they have that we were able to take advantage of.
So it's kind of like a festival that happens every year. The town comes out for it, and it sounds like people even drive great distances to come and be a part of it. So it's got a history and a reputation.
It really does. It's I think maybe 16, 18 years or so that they've been doing this. So and you know, knowing that it's the Saturday of a holiday weekend, it's something that people predict or plan for ahead of time. So it's a great opportunity. We had a table right up at the very beginning of the procession, of the place where everybody lines up to get their candles, to start singing some carols as they start out with their procession. And we're right across the way from some ice sculptures that are there that are a big draw every year as well. So it was a tremendous opportunity.
And given that 30,000 people walk by, it's a tremendous opportunity to expose or market your church or invite people to church or get the word out about particular church programs. And before we get into that, I kind of have this mental picture in mind of kind of small town USA shutting down Main Street for a little while so that all the townspeople can kind of come out. It's almost a kind of a cultural North American image of a Christmas outing. Mm-hmm. Is kind of what I picture in mind. The only thing that was probably missing in my mental imagination was the snow.
Absolutely, and thank God it was missing this year too, because we had temperatures this year kind of up in the 60s during the day, and by the time nightfall came, it was all the way down to like 43 or 48, actually, if I remember right at the beginning, which is a good 20 to 30 degrees warmer than last year. So
wow, and that's Fahrenheit. That's Fahrenheit, yes. for our
exactly.
International audience.
That made a big difference for us.
Oh, indeed. I can imagine that turnout may be a little bit lower if it was only 25 degrees Fahrenheit outside.
And you know, at the risk of being too practical, too carnal-minded in this thing, if it's cold, you know, people bundle up and so forth, but they're less willing to take something that they need to hold on to. So I actually planned for giveaways this year with smaller things that I knew would be able to fit in people's pockets. So the fact that the weather is warmer, I mean, it's, you know, along with all the comfort levels and everything else, there are some real tangible, practical motives for being happy for the warmer weather for us.
Okay. Well, in just a minute or two, we'll actually get to kind of what was on your table. And the thing that I like about this outreach is that, I mean, one of your purposes was to actually market some of your Christmas activities. Mm-hmm. You know, in a little bit, we'll get into the discussion as to some of your other purposes for being there. But in this segment, let's talk a little bit about kind of connecting with the people. So what is it that you were promoting, and what were some of the things that were on your table? And then we'll get into more of some of the conversations that you had around your table in just a little bit.
So essentially, remember the setting. You've got the idea of like small town event, people are coming. It's kind of a Christmas time theme event and so forth. So we were kind of drafting on the reason they were there in the first place as a family-focused holiday type of event. So it was a perfect opportunity for us to invite them to events that they would probably also enjoy and to make that connection for them. So we had two in particular. Group Publishing has the program called The Night in Bethlehem, and it's kind of almost, I haven't personally seen it in action yet, so I'm just going on flyers, things that I've seen so far, conversations that I've had. It's kind of like VBS for the Christmas time area. So essentially we're converting our church grounds into a first century experience of what Bethlehem might have looked like on the first Christmas, and a whole bunch of things going on. We're actually bringing in a kind of a traveling petting zoo as part of the experience for our people. So that was one easy connection for people to make, especially as they're coming with their kids, their family, and so forth. We also invited people to our family-friendly Christmas Eve service that will feature quite a few drama vignettes and special music, all sister group carol singing, of course. So that was kind of what we were inviting people to.
Before you get to the table, there are two specific events. One is that Night in Bethlehem event, and then the second event is the Christmas Eve services.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Yeah, just wanted to be clear that there were two events that you were using this outreach to promote.
And with that, and you know, we're going to talk about what's on the table in just a second, but before, and I'm pretty sure on the website you'll have a couple of pictures so they can get some visuals on this. But on the table itself, around the table, to the left of the table we have standing banner, maybe about 2 foot by 6 feet, with the basic Happy Nativity kind of scene, the North Star kind of image, and the message of Christmas begins with Christ. And then across the table, in front of the table, we had a banner that we produced locally to match that highlighted both of these events. So part of my thing with the title Christmas Fun for the Whole Family, and then mentioning the two events. So part of my thinking is if people are strolling by, perhaps for one thing they don't have time to stop by, they're not sure if they're interested and so forth, they still can get that message from maybe 20, 30 feet away of the events that we're promoting, as well as trying to keep a focus on Christ within the Christmas season in a happy, winsome, or you know, a non-threatening, kind of not-in-your-face kind of way. So that people walking by see those messages, but they've also got our website prominent if they want to pursue for some more information as well.
Right. I'll have an image of the banner that you use as a table skirt, but I noticed that you've got your church website, you know, prominently featured, and I would assume that when people go to that website, they can find out more information about those two events. But I also noticed that you didn't put your church name on the on your banner. What was the reason for that?
Well, a couple of reasons. To be honest with you, first of all, my main focus was the events themselves, rather than just pushing our name out there.
Right.
We are in kind of a heavily religious area. A lot of people that grew up in a particular faith, probably a huge percentage of them, are not necessarily practicing that faith any longer, but they still have that kind of tie and that kind of identity. So for us, if I just put the first name of our church, that probably isn't really going to communicate anything. If I put Trinity Baptist Church up there, then we're dealing with negative preconceptions and so forth. So we're really not hiding our identity. Once they get to the website, they'll see it. It's, you know, right on the homepage.
Right.
So we're not trying to hide that, but that's not going to be our selling point. That probably is not going to get anybody jumping to go to see us. So I don't know if that helps or not.
We're actually that's a great answer. I think it shows your intentionality as to what you've put on the banner. Now about the table, what all was on the table in terms of giveaways? You mentioned the giveaways were, you know, kind of pocket size or could fit into coat pockets rather than, you know, people having to carry away shopping bags. But kind of what was on there, and what was your thinking behind the material that you chose to put on the table?
It may sound like a lot as we're listening to this kind of thing on just in our ears, but hopefully you'll see on the graphic somehow it just kind of worked with a basic 2x6 kind of table. We actually have some Bibles on there from the International Bible Society. We have some pocket New Testaments from them as well. We also, from outreach.com, we have some business card size, folding type, the business card size invites to our Christmas activities. They promoted on one panel, the night in Bethlehem. On the next panel, it included a little bit of information about the current sermon series, just in case somebody was, you know, ready to dig deeper into church life. But also promoted the Christmas Eve service. On the back, had a map to the church, and also had, in our generation, had a QR code, so that somebody, especially at an outdoor event like that, on their mobile device, they could scan that code and get right to our website to get more information right away for those that wanted to do that. So we had Bibles, New Testaments, business card size invites. Also from outreach.com, we had some booklets with the Christmas story. I think they have a couple of versions of these now, but the one we had was the Christmas Begins with Christ theme, which has essentially the basic Christmas story. It also has a message for non-Christ followers that presented the gospel for them, and also a message for believers who may have drifted away from fellowship and not be connected in a church anymore. We also had Gary Rohrmeyer's Your Spiritual Journey pamphlets for those, in case we had some people that were ready to dig deeper spiritually. We also had CDs with the audio from a marriage event that we hosted about a year or two ago from Drs. Paul and Virginia Friesen, great speakers. They did a message on be part of a great marriage, what women wish men knew, what men wish women knew, and perhaps our biggest draw on the table, all of those things have tremendous spiritual value and practical value, but candy canes was the number one thing that got people coming to our table. I originally bought 200 of them thinking, you know, I was doing pretty well. It became evident pretty quickly I needed to go across the street by another 240. So it was amazing how many people came to the table just because of the candy canes at the beginning of this event. So it was great.
Okay. Well, you were able to, I mean, it sounds like you were able to give away a lot of literature. People saw your table. They could go to your website. You had different ways to, you know, put stuff in people's hands. But as you and I have talked about this event, there is some intentionality that you brought to this outreach that kind of goes beyond marketing. So tell me a little bit about what that was.
Well, thanks. I appreciate the opportunity because essentially for me, my prime motive for being there was to make some new connections with people that we might not otherwise get to talk to. So essentially we were there to make new connections, and our way of doing that, our open door, was the opportunity to promote these kind of events. So we had quite a few good, significant conversations, including a parent needing help raising a middle schooler, looking for a church with a good youth group. And it was somebody that's not attending any church at this point. She was just kind of thinking that a youth group might be helpful. A couple planning to get married, looking for a church, looking for some counseling with that. Also, quite a few people who had drifted away from church over the years and sensing the need to get back on track. Some were believers, others were from kind of a ritualistic background and looking for something a little bit more meaningful. For me, one of the joys that I had is we had, I was there, I loved doing this kind of stuff, but we also had, I'm thinking about six or seven people from the church that just church members that wanted to come by and help and engage people in conversation. And it was hard for me, but it was worth the effort just to make sure that as I saw some of our volunteers engaging in those conversations, that I resisted the temptation to get involved and try to help. And I just kind of backed off and watched those natural connections develop. And quite a few of those actually developed much better because I was out of the picture. So it kind of hurt my ego a little bit, but it was great. And one in particular, I could tell very clearly that the relationship was established there, but once some questions got a little bit deeper that my volunteer didn't feel comfortable handling or being relatively new at the church, maybe just a year or two, didn't necessarily know, she brought me into the conversation. So then we were both able to work together. So just the amount of spiritual conversations that I was able to engage in, but also that it facilitated my members connecting with people in the community too. It was just great to see God at work.
Well, I think that's I think that's kind of a key point that I hope our listeners will take away is no matter what kind of outreach that they do or any kind of marketing event like this, that your church team would be specific in looking for those spiritual conversation opportunities that are natural. They're not forced. You know, you're not giving away a fake $100 bill to start a conversation that has people trapped in it. But rather, you're being present. You're listening for spiritual thirst, which is kind of what I'm, you know, that's kind of my focus on personal evangelism. And then when that spiritual thirst is there, you kind of probe it and talk with it and develop and allow that relationship to develop a little bit further. And it sounds like in a couple of cases you pointed to possible next steps in relationship, mm-hmm. either in relationship with the Lord or in relationship to the church, like a setup for marital counseling or set up and come to youth group or those are two that you've mentioned in particular, but I think it's that intentionality of looking for those conversational opportunities.
Absolutely, and one thing I would add to you, Chris, with this one here, you know, you mentioned the fake $100 bill. Those kind of things are gimmicks, they're icebreakers, but with us, we were in a public square, at least with this particular opportunity that we had. We're in the public square. We're there, obviously, with a spiritual message. You know, I've got a big banner with Christmas Begins with Christ. So we're not hiding our identity. So essentially, just the whole table and the presence broke the ice to begin with. So I would venture, you know, if there were 30,000 people there, probably 29,000 people walked by, and I'm not even sure if we even touched their existence whatsoever, if they even knew that we were there. But for me, I look for those kind of opportunities where we can surface those that do have some interest, those that are looking for something to draw them closer to God during this period. And so that icebreaker is already, you know, non-existent for us or already taken care of. So we can just build from there with this kind of setting. So I love these kind of things.
Right. I think that, and part of it from what I know in the culture of the Northeast is kind of an in-your-face approach is doesn't work very well in many places. And so I think, you know, kind of being intentional and in watching and waiting for the spiritual conversations to happen, there's mm-hmm. a gentleness there that earns you more respect. And that may be part of where, you know, where you are in New Hampshire versus where some other people may be in the Deep South or where some people may be in the Philippines or in other places where that sure. kind of in your face is a little bit more normal. Or a little bit more
absolutely.
Tolerated.
In the South, it's when you talk about in your face, I've lived in different areas and I would interpret that very differently.
Right.
I lived in the South, so you can be very openly Christian for a while, as long as you don't get too serious asking for life change. And I grew up in New York City, so you can be in your face about anything and feel comfortable. You know?
Right.
Whereas in New Hampshire, you know, you need to be a little bit more subtle, a little bit more patient. And just give people an opportunity to sense that they can trust you, even just, you know, be willing to have a conversation about anything at that point. But anything, you know, so serious and so life-touching, if not life-changing, as their spiritual life. So that patient waiting for the Spirit to work, that's a hard balance to try to walk. But mm-hmm. having the icebreaker, that helped us a lot.
Well, I think part of what, I mean, for me, the takeaway about this particular section is one is your intentionality in looking for the potential for spiritual conversation. But then the second of all is that you are doing evangelistic activity that that connects with the culture around you versus disconnects with them, you know, as we've been kind of poking a little bit of fun at. Now, in terms of the other volunteers at your table, what are some things that you did as pastor to kind of help prepare them for looking for spiritual thirst, for service at the table? How'd you, what were some things that you did to prepare them for that?
Well, I guess, first of all, in staffing the table, I looked for people that that I would think might have a little bit more of an invitational style of evangelism. You know, when you think of Hybels and Middleburg and Strobel, they're becoming contagious Christian kind of concepts. So I looked for people that might be more inclusive and welcoming in general in their spirit. Our goal was to develop relationships with people that we could develop over time, and that as we could invite them to further events, that the spiritual content could grow and increase at each event, so that as people kept coming back for more events, it became obvious that it would become obvious that they had some interest in spiritual things. So for the most part, we had people that were pretty welcoming and sensitive and winsome in their conversations to begin with. I had a couple of people that one was definitely more of a direct style of evangelism, so I just kind of, you know, easily chose to work with that person just to remind them that we're there to make new connections rather than see conversions in that one instance. You know, God can work in any kind of setting, any kind of timing, but in general, that environment was not one that was going to lead to intense, intimate one-on-one conversations to let people think through a serious life change that they were going to count the cost on. So there's just so much going on at that point, so it wasn't the environment. But we just remind our volunteers to focus on new connections, new relationships that would then give them reasons to come back for some of the other events. So, and I was very, very proud of our volunteer team and the way they responded to that.
Well, I think it was good that you kind of pointed out that it's kind of too chaotic of an event. Maybe with 30,000 people milling around, and even if only 1,000 came to your table over the course of the hours, that's still a whole lot of people to connect with, to, mm-hmm. to share material with. You're right. It's not really the place for a massively life-changing situation. conversation, unless it has been so prepared in advance by God that, absolutely, you know, it could have been a Philip in the eunuch moment, you know. But
exactly, that's why I had Gary Rohrmeyer's Your Spiritual Journey there, just in case, you know, God yes. sent somebody that said, how must I be saved, you know. So I didn't want to work against the Spirit at that point, but I didn't want to force anything that may not have been authentic.
Right. Now, for those of you who are listening in and that are not sure what Gary Rohrmeyer's material is, if you were to search the Evangelism Coach website for the Your Journey Guide, you'll find an interview or a webinar that I did with Gary that introduces what that tool is. It's a conversational tool to help diagnose spiritual thirst. It's an excellent tool. And go to evangelismcoach.org and search for Your Spiritual Journey or the Spiritual Journey Guide. And you'll be able to find out just what that is. Now,
before you go on, I got to tell you, I was just listening to one of your other webinars that you did with Gary just last week, and it's still very good and fresh stuff. So just other listeners might enjoy some of the other materials there as well after they finish that one.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you for that plug. I mean, part of the purpose of the table is to kind of market some events that would bring visitors to your church. And you know that on my website, I'm also real big in terms of the hospitality experience at, you know, when people come to your facility. So how are you preparing your hospitality teams and church members to receive the people who come and to help prepare them to make some intentional next step type of connections?
Well, again, the invitation that we were making for this particular event was primarily to two special events rather than to a typical Sunday service. So the Night in Bethlehem event, we've got quite a few trained greeters that are making people, that will be making people feel welcomed and oriented to the event that they're coming to. Most of them will actually be in costume, actually. We also have some people the pastors on staff and some other key leaders also that will be there, just kind of generally available and milling around, some in costume and some in plain clothes, looking for those who are just kind of where you can tell the Spirit's working in them, they're processing things through, they're questioning more, and they might be ready for a little bit more deeper conversation, so we'll have an area to meet with them as well. We've also got some greeters ready for Christmas Eve to welcome people, also give them an idea of what to expect. I'm always a big fan of just kind of reducing the concerns, the anxiety level that people might have. So even through our website, we try to get people ready for what a visit to the church is going to be like, and then as much as I can when people are coming in for a first-time visit, just to give them an idea of a big picture of what to expect so that it's one less thing they have to worry about. So those are kind of the short answer for now.
Yeah, I think, I could very easily chase some tangents on preparing your greeters and all sorts of stuff, but I think you made an important point here of having a few trained greeters, and mm-hmm. and I think that's so crucial. And so there's a lot of greeter training stuff that's, again, on my website. There's some there's a DVD, there's some webinars, there's some free videos, all that's there on the website to kind of help prepare greeters for that. And I think that you've made a second awesome point here in that you want your greeters to kind of help people feel comfortable when they come to your service. And I think that's a great thing. Now, as you wind up interacting with people in these upcoming two events, what kind of plans are you making to help your first-time visitors return after these events are over?
Well, we've got at a couple of different levels, and again, we're trying to make these events gradual in the intensity or gradual in the clear spiritual content, mm-hmm. so that they are invited, first of all, to this night in Bethlehem, and it's obviously a Christmas event. It's going to be a good, happy kind of event, very hands-on for the kids and families and so forth. And there will definitely be a clear spiritual message, but they're coming basically to have fun first. And then the next thing we're inviting them to is more of clearly Christmas-oriented, clearly Christmas and spiritual dimension kind of event, when that's the primary focus, and then hopefully invite them back to other events and the regular sermon series in the January and so forth. So essentially, at all of our events, I try very hard to give people a program, a bulletin, or whatever that will give them an idea of what to expect for the event that they're currently attending. Also includes brief information on upcoming events to guide them into a little bit further in the journey, give them more reasons to get connected and involved as well.
Yeah, I think churches miss an awesome opportunity when they fail to use Christmas Eve to promote their next sermon series for the next year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I really think, with churches that do experience a huge influx of visitors for Christmas Eve services, that's an awesome time to introduce, people to what's coming after the first of the year. And helping people make that next step is part of helping people find faith in Christ. Is suggesting just the next step versus 1,000 steps down the road.
And just on the other side of that, when I mean, we're talking about Christmas now, but when my kids were younger, it was a classic joke for us that, or anecdote more than joke, I guess, on July 4th we were taken for a fireworks thing, and by the second or third explosion, they're asking if that's the grand finale. So in their mind, they're not necessarily wanting to enjoy the whole experience. They know the grand finale is the big thing that they're looking for. So as we're talking about giving them a reason to come back, otherwise I think people think that the Christmas Eve service is the grand finale of our Christian year, So usually anything after the grand finale is very anticlimactic and so forth. So if you're thinking this is the grand finale, why would I want to come back? Whereas if we get people to think, that the Christmas Eve service is very good, it's special, and, this is our next thing we're doing, that there is, I just want to combat that kind of, this is the end, this is the finale kind of experience.
Yeah, or this is the quiet extra service during the week.
Yes, exactly. Yep, absolutely. So we're going to be promoting our January series pretty strongly as early as we can in the process for all of these events as well.
Okay. Well, I think this has been fantastic. I think it gives a fantastic overview of a particular outreach that takes advantage of of a lot of foot traffic to kind of both get your services out, but also to be intentional looking for the spiritual conversation. And one of the things I like to do in nearly every podcast recording is to ask, what are some takeaways that you think pastors and other church leaders can take from this particular experience?
Well, thanks, Chris. For me, I guess the transferable principles are basically a few that would come to mind. Find areas or events that already exist in your area, in your town, in your community, where you can surface interest. So, and I personally like to recommend enough traffic so that if 95% of the people walking by show no interest whatsoever, that the 5% who do show interest will be enough to make it worth the effort. And you know, for us, let's say, you know, if 30,000 people came by, there's probably 29,000 or more that, you know, I never saw. They didn't even come in contact with us. But it left quite a lot that did surface, that did have some interest, that did come and seek us out, either for a candy cane, an invitation, or were quite a few conversations that we had. That if that was 5% or less of the people that were actually there, that was the people that did come to the surface that had some interest. So that's the first one, finding events or areas that already exist and take advantage of them. Second thing is don't say no for people. That's a basic sales or marketing kind of mentality. But even though our town's event, and if you're spiritually sensitive during the series, during the season, you'll get this pretty quickly, but even though our town's event is called the Winter Holiday Stroll, it's not called the Christmas Stroll, they included a section for nonprofits just generically, and that included the Red Cross and some other humanitarian organizations, but it was something that we were able to take advantage of, and we were welcomed back. This is our second year. We had a very clear Christian message, but we were not in people's faces. We weren't out there harassing people. But we were there for, and available for people that were interested. So we had a very good experience, very good relationship with the leaders. Also, to start early, so find areas where you that already exist. Don't say no for people. Don't assume that the town is going to be closed to anybody with a spiritual message. Then start early. For our organization, or for this event, rather, the application actually has to be filed by mid-September. So the first couple of years, we missed opportunities because we thought about this way too late. So I'm going back to that idea of don't say no for people. Even though the application deadline said it was mid-September, I did see one of the other nonprofits that were there that said that he actually just got his application in 3 days ago or 3 days before the events, but they were able to get him in there. So even though official deadlines and things may say the boat may have already sailed, you know, sometimes it's worth asking and just seeing what God can do. So those are my big takeaways.
If there is one thing that you would do different, if you were to do this event next year, what would that one thing be?
You know, the one thing for me, Chris, is I definitely need to be a little bit more intentional and more proactive, sensitive but proactive, in having a tool available to get people's contact information. I was maybe a little bit too sensitive in not wanting to come off as a marketing person, as a salesperson or whatever, so, and I didn't want to give away a new iPod or something and appeal to motives that were not necessarily going to serve the spiritual interest. So I didn't have anything in place. So I did, you know, we have obviously gave our church address and directions and so forth, website to everybody that was breathing. I gave my cell phone and email address to quite a few people, but I did not get their contact information. And that's something that I didn't want to push for people's contact information, but at the same time, I'm thinking there were probably people that were ready to give that. We just didn't even ask. So that's one thing I would change for future things. But it's a learning curve for us. This is our second year doing it, and by God's grace, we'll be doing it quite a few more years to come. So I'm sure we'll learn more things next year too.
Well, I think this has been a helpful conversation, and if you've been listening to this and you find this a helpful conversation, drop me an email at pastor_chris@evangelismcoach.org and let me know what you thought about this. I would appreciate that. Well, this has been Chris Walker with evangelismcoach.org and our podcast interview for the day. And really, it's the goal of our ministry to help churches and pastors become more effective in their evangelism, in reaching their communities for Christ. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
The preceding message was shared by Chris Walker, the main author behind evangelismcoach.org. For more materials on evangelism training and growing your church in the power of the Holy Spirit, or to request Chris to speak at your conference or event, visit the website at www.evangelismcoach.org.